Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really exciting episode ahead of us. You know, we're going to be talking with this amazing founder. We're going to be talking about accessing medical services, racing around in 2022, all the craziness that was going on and what a different world that we're in now, the lessons, you know, on what needed to happen and what was important there to raise the money that they did. And then also building what it is, a fully remote team. Again, amazing, inspiring journey in front of us here today. But without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Tai Wang. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Alejandro. Glad to be here.
So originally born in the U.S. to immigrant parents, give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
Yeah. I would say I lived a pretty kind of normal immigrant upbringing in that my parents moved here 20, 30 years ago with no education and made a life for themselves and for me. And it was definitely inspiring and what ultimately led me to being an entrepreneur, I believe.
So you grew up in Colorado and blue collar family. So what pushed you into wanting to become an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think one of the really incredible things with this country that we're in and the opportunities that there are here is that my parents were entrepreneurs themselves, but out of necessity, they weren't able to find work, especially in the 2000s, and ended up having to start their own companies to really provide for themselves and for our family. And I think through seeing them do that, I've always really wanted to start my own company. And now with the education that they've been able to provide me, I'm now able to be in just a single generation, be an entrepreneur by choice rather than out of necessity.
So what about engineering? What caught your eye on engineering? Because that's ultimately what you studied and really what got you going. So why engineering?
Yeah, I think growing up, I've always been someone that tinkered with things, that loved computers and learning how things were built, and actually ended up getting a scholarship through the federal government that was a full ride with the condition that I went into an engineering field. So I ended up studying electrical and systems engineering at Washington University in St. Louis.
So after the studies, you had to go back to government. And you were there for quite a bit. I believe it was something like 7 years where you were doing all types of stuff and then also traveling quite a little bit around the Middle East and in South Asia. So what was that experience like and what kind of worldview it gave you from seeing other parts of the world as well?
Yeah, that was an incredible experience for me. And so as part of this scholarship program, I interned at various government agencies over the summers. And then after graduating, I worked for the federal government full time for several years. There, as you mentioned, I got to travel the world to a lot of very unique places. And that was an incredibly eye-opening experience, just seeing kind of how other people lived, experiencing different cultures. And really, I would say, learning how to communicate with all kinds of people from different walks of life. It was for sure a very eye-opening experience for me.
So at what point do you realize that maybe working for government is not your thing, that maybe there's a different world, a world of business outside?
Yeah. So after, I love my time there, and I think it was an incredible opportunity and a great launch pad for kind of my career. But I think after being in it for so long, the government is a huge organization. There's a lot of red tape when it comes to really just getting things done when that's all I think anyone wants to do. And I had been approached a couple times and I had many friends that had also moved from kind of their government jobs into these various tech companies. So that's really where I think that's really when I decided that I wanted to kind of make a move and see what else was out there.
So then let's talk about what else was out there. You know, what did you look at and how do you eventually land in Palantir?
Yeah, so I had been reached out to by quite a few recruiters for various companies, both primarily actually in tech and also in consulting, which is not an uncommon thing to happen, particularly in the field that I was in within the federal government. And I had several friends that had actually moved over to Palantir right around the same time, heard really great things about it, visited their office, interviewed, and I think all around the environment, especially the entrepreneurial culture that they really try to foster there, resonated with me and ended up deciding to make that leap after meeting a lot of the individuals there and the people that I would be working with.
So let's talk about because in Palantir you were there for about a year. So I would say I'm sure that you kind of like saw the whole craziness in the venture world, you know, and how amazing, you know, and fast paced, you know, this world is. You know, I'm sure that you eventually got the bug and you are like, my God, I feel like I want to do it, you know, myself. So what was that moment like, you know, when you were like, hey, you know, I think that maybe it's time to give the notice here and take a stab at it myself.
Yeah, actually remember that moment or kind of the lead up to that fairly clearly. And I was actually during that time, I was listening to a lot of podcasts, including yours, including this podcast here, and just getting very inspirational stories from a lot of founders. I think Palantir really hires people that I would say are very entrepreneurial, that have kind of or get that kind of bug, especially once they get exposed to a world like this. And I think the major kind of trigger point there was getting into YC, into Y Combinator, after kind of throwing around a few ideas, but the experience at Palantir really kind of drove our decision to ultimately leave Palantir and start Angle Health. And part of that was really seeing a lot of the different kinds of companies that really being exposed to how many of these massive organizations operated, seeing a lot of kind of similarities when it came to my government job, and then really seeing, I think, a lot of the issues when it comes to being able to modernize and adopt kind of new technologies to bring about a much more efficient, much more integrated way of operating, especially when it came to very, very core and important services for people and for families like the one that I grew up in. And that was especially true in healthcare. And healthcare is, if you're familiar with Palantir, one of Palantir's largest verticals.
So tell us about Y Combinator, as you were referring to earlier. You know, Y Combinator, one of the best, if not the best, startup accelerator program. I mean, it's tougher to get into Y Combinator than getting into Harvard, which is unbelievable. But how was the, you know, before and after? You know, what did you guys enter Y Combinator with when you were going in with Angle Health? And then what was the Angle Health that you came out with, you know, from the experience at Y Combinator?
Yeah, Y Combinator was an incredible experience for us as first-time founders. We really didn't know what we were doing at the time. I think one of the couple of biggest values that YC provides are the network, are essentially kind of training you to be a founder through the experiences of all of these other founders and partners, most of whom are former founders as well, and really exposing you and educating you on the whole kind of fundraising and venture capital ecosystem, which is something that I never had any experience in before. I think going into YC, we were really just kind of two friends with an idea, with a lot of kind of challenges and problems we saw with some of these legacy industries and these legacy companies, and coming out really having a strong sense of what it takes to actually build a highly disruptive company, which I think many YC companies are, and also very importantly, how to raise the capital that's needed in order to build a company like that, particularly a company like ours, like Angle Health, which is highly regulated and it is fairly capital intensive when compared to most other startups.
So, and for the people that are listening to get it, what ended up being the business model of Angle Health? How do you guys make money?
Yeah, so we do a variety of things, but essentially what Angle Health is a one-stop healthcare benefits solution for employers, where we're making it faster and easier and more affordable for employers to purchase health insurance for their employees, and for their employees to access healthcare benefits. So our products themselves are comprehensive ACA and ERISA compliant group health insurance plans. That's health insurance purchased by employers and covering their employees, which is the vast majority of health insurance in the U.S. So we provide much more than just the insurance product itself, but we actually operate a fully licensed health insurance carrier, as well as a couple other entities and a third-party administrator that provides essentially this, all of the services that sit around kind of your healthcare benefits.
So you were alluding to this earlier, which is basically the regulatedness of building a company like this. I mean, when you are ultimately building a startup, you know, especially a startup like this, you have two things. I mean, you have two uncertainties. One, the one of building a company from nothing. And then two is building in a very highly regulated market. So how has it been being able to blend both of those uncertainties, and how did you guys, you know, come across, you know, the challenges that that you've experienced so far?
Yeah, so I think this is one where maybe our background has helped us. So my co-founder Anirban also worked for the federal government as a machine learning engineer for several years before joining Palantir as well, but having operated and at Palantir, where we had a lot of government customers that we worked closely with, I think it really taught us how to kind of navigate these various government organizations and operate in environments that have a very high level of regulation, compliance, and overall kind of regulatory risk. So I think our experience there really helped us kind of navigate all of this and be comfortable in kind of operating in this sort of environment. The biggest challenge when it comes to building a company in a regulated space, especially early on, is that it becomes there's a long lead time when it comes to actually being able to go live with a product, because especially if it's a company or a product that requires licensing, regulatory approvals, things like that. So it does require a decent amount of capital up front to be able to go through that process or those processes, and then actually be able to launch a product there. I think the it's definitely not for everyone. I think the important piece there is really being able to do it. I mean, I think one thing that really spoke to kind of our story and to many of our investors is that we were able to go through these processes fairly capital efficiently. So when compared to many of the Gen 1 insurtechs that raised more capital than we've pre-launched than we've raised in the entire existence of our company, and took 1 to 2+ years to go live, we actually got licensed in about 6 months from the time that we decided to enter our first market and went live within a year, with a fraction of the capital that many of these kind of first generation insurtechs needed to get to the same point.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So talk to us too about being capital intensive. I mean, you guys have raised quite some money, you know, about $63 million. How has it been the experience and the journey of raising money as well for you guys?
Yeah, so for us, the capital intensity comes in the form of essentially regulatory capital requirements from our regulators. So similar to because a core piece of our business is actually providing health insurance, we're providing that. Is a regulated financial service, similar to a bank, where we actually are required to maintain maintain certain amounts of capital on our balance sheet to assume the risk that we're assuming. When it comes to fundraising for that's obviously not kind of a traditional use of venture capital, nor would I say is a very efficient or good use of venture capital, in that venture capital is equity capital is a very expensive form of capital for what will essentially just sit on your balance sheet. So there are other tools for that, but getting started, we did raise, and many of these most of these insurtechs that have formed over the past 10 years or so have raised venture capital to address that concern. I would say the challenge with that is really in I think the performance and in kind of what people were chasing prior to, I would say, kind of like the 2021-2020 timeframe, where not just in insurtech but across tech in general, capital was very freely available. Everyone was essentially chasing kind of like top line revenue numbers. Whereas in a business like ours, and especially in the time that we were fundraising, this is one of time where many of these kind of Gen 1 insurtechs had gone public. People saw how they performed in the public markets. And realize, oh, this is a business where the underlying business fundamentals matter a lot. And that's really what we needed to focus on, and focus on building a very kind of sustainable business, even at a very small scale, when it comes to what is actually important for the business itself. And I think now, over the past couple of years, we've really moved into an era where that's also true of any company, where the unit economics are extremely important, where today capital is fairly constrained, and survival, kind of being that default alive, is what matters in kind of today's market.
Can you talk to us about that comment on default alive? Because this is something from Paul Graham from Y Combinator, and something that is very much present on the world that we're living in today for startups. So could you expand on that?
Yeah. So the idea of being kind of default dead or default alive is really, I don't think that I should really explain it. I think I should direct people to Paul Graham's blog post specifically about it. I don't want to take like any credit for this, but it's really about as a company, are you if you just continued operating the company as it is today, are you default dead in that you will eventually run out of money, or are you building a company where you're default alive, where you maybe are not profitable today, but by continuing to operate the way that you are and growing in the way that you are, you will be default alive, in that you will ideally without additional capital be able to hit a point of break even or have the option to be profitable.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an amazing shift that we have experienced in the market, because, you know, going from the growth above everything else to now profitability, right? Now that's what people are really appreciating. I think that statement, you know, and that essay from Paul Graham is a real good one for the people that are listening to read, and amazing, you know, that comment that you mentioned in that regard. I think that one aspect that is very interesting about your guys' operation with Angle Health is that everyone is fully remote. So how have you guys gone about building a fully remote team, and tell us about this?
Yeah, so we started the company right as the pandemic was getting started. We went through YC. We finished YC in March of 2020. So when everything shut down, and that's when we raised our first round. So we've really built the company through the pandemic, and as a result, have built a fully remote company. I would say building culture is one of the hardest things when you have a fully remote company like that, where many of our employees met someone else at the company for the first time just a few months ago, when we had our first kind of full company offsite. I think the most important pieces when it comes to building a remote first company is continuing to build kind of a sense of culture and having consistent touch points across the company when it comes to employees just meeting each other. And one of the things that I always try to note, especially when we have new employees joining at our all hands, is to reach out to employees, to others, especially people that you don't work with on a day-to-day basis, just to get to know them, just to learn, just have a random coffee chat. There's actually a few Slack apps too that essentially facilitate this for you. I think what's also really important when it comes to working in a fully remote company is and when it comes to communicating effectively, is having good documentation and having strong kind of guidance on how to communicate, on what tools are used for what, and also when it comes to kind of resources for the team and who to reach out to for a given issue. And I know a lot of these things are actually And we've faced this a lot through the kind of growth of our company. A lot of these things don't exist at smaller startups, but I think even for 10, 20, 30 person companies, these are still extremely important if you're fully remote.
So imagine you were to go to sleep tonight, Ty, and you wake up in a world where the vision of Ango Health is fully realized. What does that world look like?
Yeah, I think that world looks like, maybe this is a little lofty, but that world looks like one where preventable diseases are a thing of the past, where things like diabetes and hypertension and many of the chronic diseases that the most prevalent chronic diseases that exist in our world today are actually not prevalent or are extremely rare because we've done such a good job of preventing these kinds of diseases in the first place. And really that comes down to being able to build a system that focuses on things like preventative health, that increases access to the programs and services that deliver this level of preventative health. And really, we built Angle out of our own frustrations with the healthcare system here. And I bet you and everyone that is listening to this has had some story around whether it's themselves or a family member or a friend dealing with some negative experience with healthcare. And for me personally, I grew up in a working class immigrant family. My parents worked multiple service jobs. They couldn't afford to do things like take time off work to go to in-person doctor's appointments or take care of their own health while providing for our family. And they also want multiple chronic diseases. It wasn't really until going to Palantir and seeing how many of these large organizations operated that I realized why, especially in the past 10 years or so, we've had this explosion of, you know, new ways of receiving medical services, things like telehealth and telemedicine and chronic disease management programs when it comes to things like diabetes and MSK. But the way that many of these programs and many of these services are distributed, especially these kind of digital or tech-enabled ones, is through employer benefits or through kind of directly these companies directly contracting with other companies to offer that as a benefit on top of their health insurance. We realized that in order to really kind of increase access to these kinds of services, to really kind of democratize who can access these services, so it's not just your employees that are working at like Netflix or Google or Palantir, who's paying six to seven figures to these companies to provide that as an additional benefit. In order to really kind of expand that to the people that really need them, the people that are working for your restaurant groups or your manufacturing companies or retail chains or things like that, we had to rebuild kind of this health plan infrastructure, this health plan stack from the ground up, on this modern infrastructure so that we could integrate these kinds of services and deliver them to the people that truly need them. Because it's not your most of your engineers or lawyers or financial people at these large financial institutions that need diabetes prevention programs. It's your people that are generally working in kind of lower income professions and in areas too. So places that are essentially kind of healthcare deserts that really need access to services like telehealth and telemedicine that don't have access to it today.
So let's say I put you into a time machine and I bring you back in time, Ty, to that moment that you were incubating the thought here, maybe 2018 and 2019. Let's say you're able to give a piece of advice to that younger self before launching a business, before launching Ango Health. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Yeah, I would say that piece of advice would be to, especially when it comes to building a company and hiring a team, is to really focus on hiring slowly and building kind of a thesis around the role and the people and the culture that you want to cultivate at the company, because ultimately those are the people that are going to make your company successful or not successful. I mean, those people are your company. So, and I know that, especially as a first time founder, we definitely, did not always stick to that. And most of the time making panic hires are actually cost you more in the long run than what it may feel like in the moment.
I hear you. Now, Ty, for the people that are listening that would want to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, definitely. Feel free to reach out at Ty, that's T-Y, at anglehealth.com.
Amazing. Well, easy enough. Well, hey, Ty, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an honor to have you with us today.
Thanks so much, Alejandro. It's great being here.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.